Check, check. All right. Well, welcome back from lunch, everyone. So glad you guys are here. I know we were running a little bit late, and so I know that shortened your lunch time a little bit, so we appreciate you guys getting back here. And so just to introduce myself, my name is David Lee, and I'm one of the associate pastors here at Lighthouse, and I had the privilege of overseeing our disability ministry. And you are here because you are here to talk about disability and the church. You want to find out what disability ministry looks like in the local church. And I'm absolutely positive that there is a range of experience. There's a range of churches that are present here. There are probably some of you who are just starting to think about this, and right now your church has nothing, and you have no experience in this, and you're here because you want to try to figure out some beginning steps. Some of you here are from churches that have very well-established disability ministries, and I'm looking forward to talking to you afterwards to figure out what we can do better. But regardless of where you're at in the spectrum, we just want to figure out how we can kind of take everything that we've heard this morning and really put boots on the ground and figure out on a practical level what will it look like for our churches to walk alongside these individuals and families and really begin to minister the gospel to them and love them well. And so wherever you are, whether you've been doing this for, you know, just starting today or you've been doing this for decades, we just want to grow in our understanding of what this looks like in our local churches and it's suited for our particular local church context. So we're going to share largely from our own experience. As the pastor, I'm going to share just a little bit about some of the high level kind of big picture stuff that we look at when we talk about our disability ministry. But we'll also have some of our some of the other leadership from our disability ministry that I'll be sharing some of the particulars as well. And God's been very gracious over the years to grow our ministry. Our disability ministry is called Bridge Ministry, and it has really been God's grace to us to allow disability to be something that is really hardwired into who we are as a church. It is something that we cannot get away from. It's in the back of our minds all the time, and we're constantly trying to figure out how we can do it better and love these families better. But at the same time, there are a lot of things that we're still figuring out. And so please don't take anything that we say as gospel truth. We're still trying to figure out the best way to serve our families. And every family is unique, as we've heard today. And so we would appreciate any conversation we can have with you guys about what you guys are doing well and how you guys are loving the people in your churches. Some of the things that we experienced uniquely here at Lighthouse is that we're a ministry of mostly young families in our disability ministry. If you were here on a given Sunday, you would see, I think we have, I don't know what our numbers are now, like probably about like 250 to 300 children, you know, in our children's program from like that's year one to fifth grade, and about maybe 700 adults. That's a pretty crazy ratio. And so our demographic is skewed in the younger family kind of range. And that means that a lot of our disability ministry is really trying to serve those families. So what that means is we don't have a lot of the older population is not as represented for us. And so we have a couple of young adults, a couple of high school students, but we don't really have any like grown adults that are affected by disability right now. And what we are starting to experience are some of our older saints, you know, that are beginning to experience chronic health issues. And a lot of their needs are very similar to what we would find in disability ministry. So all that to say is that we're still figuring this out too. So if you can learn from our mistakes and be helped by any of the things that we would do, we would love to share that with you. So just a brief overview of what we're going to cover in our time today. So I'm going to cover kind of the foundations for if you wanted to start a disability ministry, what are the foundations you kind of need to have set in place? And then I'm going to hand it off to Mei Shiotsu, and she's our coordinator for our disability ministry, and she's been doing a great job. And she's going to be talking about our intake process, how we kind of take families in, and also our shadowing program. These are the individuals that are partnered or buddied with our disability kids and help them participate in programs. After that, Zach Chen, who is one of our Bridge core members, will be talking about our respite events, how we provide childcare for a certain number of hours so parents can go do whatever the parents need to do. And then at the very end of it, we're going to open it up to questions. So I realize that we're going to be dumping a ton of stuff at you, and you'll probably say, well, what about this? Like, hopefully we'll address some of those things as we're talking, so just try to hold your questions to the end. So the way that I think the time was broken up, most of the other sessions have like two kind of big topics they're trying to cover with a break in the middle. I think as we were talking about our content, what we're going to try to do is just plow through this thing. I will not be offended if you have to stand up, walk around in the back. We've seen it all. And so whatever it takes to stay engaged, we're totally fine with that. And we want this to be as practical as possible. And to that end, what we've done is we've included at the end of your seminar notes, I think it's yellow, right? Is that the color? I think there's one or two lucky people that may have gotten a pink one because you ran out of yellow paper. But the yellow packet is the packet for this seminar. And at the end of it, there's several appendices. And this is like all of our documentation, all of our policies, all of the forms we use, so that if you're trying to figure out, well, what would this look like for our church, you can take exactly what we have and ignore what you want to ignore and steal whatever you want to steal. It's all yours, free for the taking. So is this going to work? Zach, can you do me a favor and run back there? Can you do me a favor and run back there and advance the slide for me? Thank you. So I want to just share a little bit of my story when it comes to disability. And so when I was a young seminary student just out of college, disability was the farthest thing from my mind. It wasn't like I was opposed to it. I just didn't know anything about it. And I took a discipleship lab at my seminary, which was just a class you had to take with, you know, one of the professors or one of the pastors at the church that was associated with the seminary. And you never knew who you were going to get. You know, you just kind of got assigned to one, and that's who you had for that semester. And in God's providence, I was put into Rick McLean's discipleship group. And Rick McLean is the pastor for disability ministry at Grace Community Church. And just in the few weeks that I had him as a professor, he just opened my eyes to the fact that this was a thing. Like, this is a real, legitimate, beautiful, wonderful thing that Grace Community Church was doing. And honestly, it was something I had no knowledge of at all. And at the time, I was doing youth ministry, and I was trying to find just service opportunities and missions opportunities for the youth in my group. And I was trying to figure out, like, what's, you know, this is the problem that all youth groups have, like, what's close, cheap, and easy, right? And turns out that actually the thing that was a real legitimate option were these Johnny and Friends family retreats that are offered annually. And these are week-long retreats that Johnny and Friends hosts for families affected by disability, and they require volunteers to go and serve at these sites to help the families participate in the program. And so I thought, well, I'll just take a bunch of youth with me. And so that picture in the upper left-hand corner is the first year we ever went. And so that is May, you know, in the yellow shirt, who is now coordinating our disability ministry. She got her start there. And Sammy and Justin and me and, you know, several pounds ago. And we loved it. It was just mind-blowing to us that these families were so hungry for the gospel, hungry for hope, hungry for help, and they were coming to us, you know, and coming to this organization and looking for a way to be served. And that was really the start for us as a church to just have these individuals that were kind of passionate about this. And the picture below that is a couple years later. This, I think, was the biggest team we sent out. It expanded beyond our youth group and began to include just kind of whoever wanted to go. And a lot of the people that, you know, we're part of these teams are now the people who are serving in our disability ministry. And it really was a kind of the starting blocks for us and at the grassroots level of just creating a culture of this is a group of people that we want to love and we want to serve well. And at the same time, this wasn't necessarily something that the elders of the church were really actively thinking about and processing. It wasn't, again, that they were opposed to it. It just wasn't something that had risen to the top of their list. And in God's providence and wisdom, he chose to bring the Hubert family to our church many years ago. And you got to hear their testimony. And apparently what happened was they called Pastor Kim, you know, as they were visiting the church, and they said, hey, we want to can we sit down with you? We want to talk to you about your church. And pretty much they sat down with Kim at a local Hawaiian restaurant and, Zach, can you turn that knob, please? Sorry. Normally on a Sunday, everything's automated, right? Like, it was kind of weird. Actually, Zach, can you turn the air conditioning on, too, in the back? Just push the override button. Thank you. Disability ministry, where everything is kind of flexible. And so they sat down, the Huber sat down with Kim and said, hey, this is our family. This has been our experience in the church. Are we welcome here? And Kim said, absolutely. You know, like, the elders have been praying about this. We want to figure out how we can love families like yours, and will you help us in this? And that began the process of starting a formal disability ministry here at Lighthouse. And our ministry is called Bridge. We're trying to bridge these families with the church and with the broader world and minister the gospel to them. And over the years, God has been so kind. We have 14 kids in our Bridge ministry that actually have disabilities. Oh, yes, right. 14 kids, 13 families, and about 38 volunteers that kind of will help with our shadowing responsibilities. And so it's kind of an overview of who we are. And in my kind of portion of our seminar, what I want to talk about are the foundations for starting disability ministry in your church. Like, as you're kind of getting the ball rolling in your church, what are the things that ought to be in place that will really help make this something that is faithful and sustainable and a blessing to you, to your church, and to these families? And so the first foundation is to come before God in humility. Okay, come before God in humility. The stuff that we're talking about is just impossible, absolutely impossible. Like, what we're trying to accomplish is we want to see people's souls affected. We want to see people come to know Christ. We want to see people who are spiritually dead be raised to life. We want to see sin be combated. We want to see depression be defeated. We want to see people who are hopeless receive hope. And something like a game night in and of itself is not going to accomplish that. You know, just having another, a collated spreadsheet is insufficient for those things. These are miraculous things that only God can do. And so what that means is before you do anything is you need to come before the Lord and plead with him to allow his will to be done in your church and that you would come alongside him in his will to see the gospel minister to these families. Psalm 127, 1 and 2 is just one of the most humbling verses when it comes to anything we would try to accomplish in ministry. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. So we can do all the programming in the world. You can have the most organized church structure. You can put through all the money and all the resources in the world at it. But if you're not doing it out of dependence on the Lord, it's in vain. We will not see fruit unless the Lord is behind us. So we need to come before him humbly. The second is to clarify your mission. Okay, clarify your mission. It's really important that you have a clearly defined mission for your ministry. Like, what is it really that you're trying to accomplish? What's the why behind disability ministry? Like, what's the target you're trying to hit? And this will help guide your decision-making. Disability ministry can tend to be a very program-oriented thing. And maybe you're fired up by this and you're trying to think about what disability ministry might look like for your church. And the first question you might have is, what do I need to do? Like, what do I need to do? What kind of programs do we need to put in place? What kind of training do I need to receive? Do we do shadows? Do we do buddies? Do we have special events? How do we grow church awareness? All the stuff that we need to do. But before we can do anything, we have to know the why. Like, what is the target we're trying to hit? It has to be clear in your mind and in your church's mind why it is that you're pursuing this kind of ministry. And this will help keep you focused in deciding what your ministry actually looks like. So I think I have it in your notes what our mission is for our disability ministry. So Bridge Ministry exists to minister the gospel and connect those created with these God-designed abilities with the church and the world. And there's a really two-pronged kind of aims here. We want to minister the gospel, right? This is the thing that every person needs, regardless if you're typical or you have a disability, is you need the gospel. We need the rescue that Christ provides through his death and resurrection on the cross. And so if we're not accomplishing that, if that is not the aim and ultimate goal to see the gospel taught and applied and lived out amongst these families, then we're going to miss the mark. And so one of the filters we're trying to run everything through is this helping us minister the gospel? Sure, that event might be fun. It could be really enjoyable. But is it going to be an avenue to minister the gospel? And if it's not, then maybe we should take a second look at it and really think about whether that's what we want to be doing as a church. And we also want to connect those that are created with God-designed abilities with the church and the world. So we want to make sure that these families, these individuals, have a place here in our church. We want to try to make as many connections as possible, and we want to be able to see them use their gifts to bless the church and to bless the world. And so for us, this really helps to clarify, what it is that we're trying to do, because there are like a billion good ideas when it comes to disability ministry. There's a billion good ideas when it comes to ministry, period. But just because it can be done, that doesn't mean that it should be done. And the really deciding factor of whether it should be done is whether or not it helps you accomplish your mission. Someone proposed a while ago, like, what if we had like a disability dance, where we opened up our church building and we invited the community out to have a dance, and it was just this sign that, we're all just, we could, really enjoy one of those company and we could be a light to the community. And that sounds wonderful. That sounds like a great idea. The logistical challenges of that terrify me, but it sounds like a great idea. And it's not that we would never do that, but if we were just getting off the ground, we really had to think, is this the thing that we really want to put our resources in that will help us best accomplish our mission? And maybe that's something we can tackle down the road, but for right now, if we're just trying to primarily handle our mission, then we got to table it, and we can't really, it probably wouldn't be the wisest thing to do. A clearly defined mission will help you have clearly defined parameters for your ministry that are scalable and sustainable. It's better to do one thing really well for a long time than to do 10 things poorly for 3 months, right? So like we said, there's a billion great ideas when it comes to disability ministry, and one of the dangers is believing that you have to do all of them at the same time, right away. So you think, okay, I'm going to personally disciple every kid that comes into our ministry. I'm going to meet with them once a week. I'm going to open up a coffee shop, that will employ those with special needs. Yeah, I'm going to do all these things. But you have to ask yourself, is this scalable? Like, sure, you might be able to meet up with a kid once a week as long as there's one kid. But what happens when the second kid comes, and the third, and the 10th, and the 20th? Like, is this scalable? Is this something that you yourself are going to be able to do? And is it sustainable? Like, whatever the scope of the program is that you're offering, like, is that something you're really going to be able to keep up so it is a consistent, stable source of hope and ministry for these families? Because for them, life is inconsistent and unstable in so many ways. And we don't want to have that same kind of trajectory in their lives as the church. We want to be a consistent source of hope and ministry to them. And so if we're offering something and we do it, totally guns blazing for like a month and say, it's just too hard, we can't do it anymore, that could do more damage for the sake of the gospel than if we try to just start slow, do a few things really, really, really well, and keep that going as long as we can. And so for us, the things that we found to be a priority was our shadowing program, and May is going to talk more about the specifics of that, where we partner our disability kids with shadows that help them participate in the program. And then from there, we started offering respite events, occasional child care so parents can invest in their marriage. So that's clarifying your mission. Next foundation is to cultivate pastoral passion. Greg Huber shared it, and Kim shared it as well, that it is such a blessing and it is so helpful when you're able to get support from your church leadership, whether it's your senior pastor or your elders or your deacons or whatever church polity structure you're in, whoever the leadership level is, if they can be on board with this, and not just in a, oh, that's great for you to take care of, but if they have buy-in, if they are feeling the burden of this and they feel the sense of ownership and the calling that we as a church need to take this on, that's really when the whole church as a whole becomes transformed. What we really want to avoid is a situation where disability ministry is this own little thing, like off in the corner of the church. And it's, oh, great, like that person over there is really passionate about it. We are a church that takes care of disability, right? But that's not what we really want. We don't want siloed ministries where they're off doing their own thing. We want us as a church as a whole to be engaged in this. And in order for that to happen, leadership is so critical. And it's not to say that disability ministry can't be done. Like, maybe that's the situation you're in. Like, you feel as if you're on an island. It doesn't mean that what you're doing is not valuable or is not fruitful or is not important. But it is hard to see long-term culture shifts unless you have the support of your pastors. There's a lot of different reasons for this. I think one is it allows for greater alignment with the mission of your church. So whatever the mission of your church is, how does your disability ministry come alongside that? If you're just off, in your own corner of the church doing your own thing, are you really helping to further the mission of your church? Are you really helping your elders lead and shepherd the church in the direction they're hoping to go? You have a greater chance of church-wide culture building. Let's say, Patty has a real passion for disability ministry, and she's just kind of doing this thing on her own, but she's never in front. She's never, in public. She never gets a chance to talk about it. She's just kind of doing her thing. Like, so the rest of the church, this is just something that's happening in the shadows. But if leadership is engaged in this and they're publicly talking about it, if they're preaching on it, if they're making the church as a whole aware of the fact that this is what we're behind, you have a greater chance of transforming the whole culture of your church. And it also helps with acquiring resources. So this is just publicity for events, publicity for volunteers, facilities. How do we have enough space? Making sure you have adequate funding. It was a real testament to the leadership of the church to put this conference on. We were just talking about how $20 for a day like this feels like a steal to me. And And so we're definitely operating at a loss for this kind of thing, but the church was happy to do it. The elders were like, no, we want to commit resources to this because we're about disability. It's just so much easier to get resources when your leadership is behind it. Now, of course, you're thinking, that sounds great, but that's not me. Like, what if it is just me? I've been trying to get my leadership on board with this thing, and it's fallen on deaf ears, and I'm the only one, and I'm so frustrated. I'm so disappointed by my pastors and disappointed by my church leadership. What if it's just me? A few encouragements for you, because I think we've all been there. I think one is to be patient. You need to wait on God's timing. You know, God works in different people's hearts, including your leadership, at his own pace and his own timing. And we can't rush people, and we certainly can't rush God. And so they may not be where you would hope them to be, but at least for right now, they are where God wants them to be. And you can just be patient, trusting that, okay, in God's time, he's going to get them there. You need to be gracious. It is so easy, if you're the only person who's passionate about this, to be drawn into resentment and bitterness. And you start kind of going down that rabbit trail of like, how come they never seem to support this? Why is it they don't care at all about people that are affected by disability? Are they even Christians, these pastors of mine? And you have some really dark thoughts about the state of your leadership, but you need to be gracious. I mean, none of us come into the world perfectly loving disability ministry, being all about this. You know, this is something that all of us started somewhere with, and people were so gracious with our ignorance and our foibles and our mistakes, and recognize that you're a product of grace, that you're here and you're passionate about this purely because of the grace of God, and you need to extend that same grace to your leadership. You also need to be submissive. You're called to submit to your church leadership. And so let's say you present to them, you know, your case that this is something we ought to be passionate about, but, you know, they say, you know, we're totally on board with it. We agree this is something that is important. Right now, we don't have the resource or the manpower to do all this stuff. We want to do it, but we can't do it right now. You know, are you willing to submit to the decision-making of your leadership? Again, trusting, being patient, being gracious. I think this also means that you don't badmouth your leadership or start creating like your own disability faction, right? It's so easy, right, to say, just start nudging your friends, like, hey, it wouldn't be great if we had pastors who cared about this stuff, right? And there's all kinds of things. Like, you may not know the whole story, right? You're not in elders' meetings. You're not in pastors' meetings. You may not know everything that your church is going through. And so there's lots of different reasons why it is that your church may not be able to be as engaged in any kind of ministry as you would hope them to be. And so be submissive for your leadership. I think on a practical level, you can find opportunities to include leadership in ways to love those with disabilities. So how can you cultivate in your leaders a love for this is to bring them along. Expose them as much and as you can, as often as you can, to families that are affected by disability. There was a gal who was visiting us from another church, and she was in this predicament where it just felt like she was the only person that was shadowing and the only person who was caring for these kids, and it was hard for her to get her pastors on board. And so one thing that we suggested to her was, hey, you ever think about just asking the elders if they want to take a turn shadowing? Because there's only one guy preaching, right, on a Sunday. That means the other guys aren't doing anything. And so, like, you know, maybe that's something you can approach them on. Like, what if they sat down and they sat with Timmy, you know, through the course of a Sunday service and participated and just got a flavor, a taste of why this is such a great thing? You can disciple others to support the needs of those with disability. And so if you feel burdened because you're the only one, then don't be the only one anymore. And so if you're going to go ahead and you know, meet with Tate or meet with Tyler for their service, and you know, grab a younger person, grab a youth student, grab a young adult who's got nothing better to do, and bring them with you and say, hey, we're just going to go sit here, and you know, Tate, you know, Hubert loves doing puzzles. We're going to sit and we're going to watch him do puzzles for an hour, and we're going to love it. It's going to be great. And just discipling people in that process can really start kind of moving the culture in that way. Next is to create a church-wide culture of love for disability. So speaking of culture, and Pastor Kim mentioned a lot of these things, so I'm not going to, you know, go crazy on this. But we want to make sure that this is something that's in the air of our churches, not something that just comes up once in a while in our literature. We want this to be part of the atmosphere of our churches. And a couple of ways that this has been helpful for us, or accomplished for us, is we preach on it from the pulpit. So Pastor Kim mentioned that we have a Disability Sunday every year, and we preach on disability, for disability, and again, it's a highlight for us. but we talk about it other Sundays of the year too. We don't just wait for Disability Sunday. Even making regular application. So I don't know if there's any pastors here or people who are preaching, but even just mentioning these members of your church family in your preaching. You know, how would this particular principle apply to someone who has a child with autism? And having specific application for them can be so powerful and so meaningful to them. And it shows the church that you care about this and you're thinking about it. You want to pray publicly for those affected by disability. So as we're praying, are these part of the people that, are these people we're bringing before the Lord and interceding on behalf of? Pushing for wise integration. So if the church is to love these families, then they have to be part of the church. And in order for them to be part of the church, they have to be as fully integrated as possible. And this was something that we deliberately chose to do at Lighthouse. Is we didn't want to have Lighthouse and then disability stuff over here. We wanted to have everyone involved in our disability ministry be as fully integrated as possible into the life of the church. We want these families, we want these individuals to participate fully in everything that God has for them in this church in whatever ways are most appropriate for them. And so for us, that means that we mainstream our kids in our children's program. And so we don't have a special disability class or a disability area. We try as much as possible to include them in the programming and have them participate in ways that are appropriate for them. For, you know, Pastor Kim mentioned that our older kids that are have aged out of youth, out of children's ministries, like they're able to participate in Sunday service as much as they're able to. And then they are able to go do their own program and then they come back in at the end. And there is a lot of wisdom that we need to exercise in this. And every family is different, every kid is different. We need to be wise with regards to the individual with a disability. We have to be wise for the rest of the church. And things often go very unexpectedly when you try to do full integration. It is not a very clean, simple, easy thing. I was preaching one Sunday, and one of our bridge kids who was out in the gym got into the sanctuary. I don't know where his shadow went, but he got into the sanctuary, and he loves the drums. And so I'm preaching, right? And he comes up on the stage, and he just runs across the stage, and I'm trying to figure out what do I do in this moment, right? And I don't want to like unnecessarily call attention to him, and I want to acknowledge him. He's here with me. And honestly, I just said, "Hey, Evan, how's it going?" And then his shadow found him and took him off the stage. And then addressing the church family and saying, "Well, if any of us have kids, we all know what this is like." In these unexpected moments where, you know, kids, you know, are gonna be kids. And I kept preaching. You know, but it wasn't like I wasn't getting bent out of shape about it, and no one else was either. We just need to lean into the fact that if you're going to wisely integrate these families into your church, it's going to be messy, and that's okay. And we need to provide opportunities for the whole church to love those affected by disability. Are there clear next steps for your people in your church to love these families? It's one thing to say, "Hey, go love disability families," and have like nothing for them to do, right? But are there ways that you can, like a baton you can easily pass to the other members in your church to say, "Hey, like here are these families, here's a specific thing you can do." Like, and they can range, right? You can have short-term, low-commitment opportunities. Our respite nights are a good one. They're a good entry point. So you can just show up for these, was it 3 hours? 3 hours? You show up for 3 hours this one time, you know, and we'll train you, we'll give you everything you need. And after that, you don't have to do it ever again if you don't want to, right? But just 3 hours, just try it. But they always come back. They always come back. And sharing a meal with them, you know, it's like, just, "Hey, like, would you mind just going out to dinner with this family or having this family over for, you know, for dinner at your house?" That would be such a powerful thing for them. Johnny and Friends Family Retreats was a great entry point for us. Again, it was really, really impactful. In fact, I think the one closest to us, the Murrieta one, I hear still looking for volunteers. And so if you're, I think you can still sign up to be part of that retreat. But you also should have longer-term, higher-commitment opportunities. So this could be regular shadowing, like people who are willing to commit, you know, once a month, you know, twice a month, to being a buddy, you know, to these kids in your children's program. And it might even extend to counseling. You know, would you, as a, you know, someone who's just walking with the Lord wisely, who can apply Scripture to the heart, would you be willing to meet with this couple? They're really struggling in their marriage, or even having discipleship. Like, would you be willing to meet with this mom and just meeting with her occasionally to talk about how she can grow as a mother. So we need to have these longer-term, higher-commitment opportunities as well. But in either case, we need to have these next steps to create a culture. Next foundation. So I don't know if you could tell, but Pastor Kim speaks real fast, and I am from the Pastor Kim School of Preaching. So we're blazing here. You can always listen to the recording afterwards and slow me down. So next foundation is to clear away obstacles. And practically speaking, what are the obstacles that individuals and families with disability experience that may hinder the gospel? And again, removing obstacles doesn't change anyone's heart, but it certainly can make it easier for someone to receive the gospel and have the gospel change their heart. And so be thinking, like, what are the things that just make it hard for a family to show up? Like, what makes it hard for when a family sits here and is trying to take all this in that is really making it difficult for them to take in God's word or to meet people and receive grace? Are the developmental obstacles? You know, are the programs we're asking some of these individuals to participate in, is that really appropriate for them and where they're at a cognitive level? And we need to adapt our curriculum and programming to allow an individual to comprehend whatever they can at an appropriate level. And so for our children's ministries in our Bridge Kids, like, we will have kind of separate lessons tailor-made for those kids. And it could be, and May will probably be able to give more examples of what exactly those look like, but we're considering developmental obstacles. What about physical obstacles? If a kid has a sensory issue and they're sensitive to loud noises or bright lights, are we providing an environment for them where they can still participate as much as they can, but we can be sensitive to that? And so, just even having earmuffs, or having a place for them to go if they need to kind of wind down and calm down a little bit. A real basic one is accessibility. If someone in a wheelchair came to your church, would they have any way of getting in? Would they have any easy way to identify how they can get in? And so just making sure the physical obstacles are taken care of can be a huge blessing to these families. What about relational obstacles? You've heard today that one of the major challenges for a lot of these families is isolation and feeling disconnected from community. And can you be thinking about how can we go out of our way to create avenues of community for these families? What we do for some of our events is we'll actually, call families individually and say, hey, we're having this retreat. And I don't know what you're thinking if you don't think this is something you can do, but this is something you can do. And we want you here. You need to come to this retreat. And we will do whatever it takes to get you and your family here. And that personal invitation, that personal touch can make such a huge difference. Inviting families into others' homes, again, can be such a huge blessing to just create avenues of relationships. And just be thinking, like, are these families welcome in our different community groups? If you have regular small groups, if you have regular community groups, is it clear to these families that, we want you to come, and we want your kids to come. We want you to be part of our church family. Time is another obstacle. Just with the constant pressures and kind of rigors of disability, families oftentimes feel as if they don't have enough time because the needs are so constant. They don't have the time to invest into their marriages. They don't have the time to invest into their spiritual lives. They don't have the time to invest into others and to bless and serve others. So how can we as a church help them overcome that obstacle? How can we create time for them? That's why respite for us has been such a blessing. Just giving couples 3 hours to go on a date and really invest in one another and love and serve one another. Just providing childcare on an informal level. And so there have been a number of families in our church that, when they hit a bump in the road and things are really difficult, I'm just amazed that not even necessarily through Bridge Ministry, but just the church as a whole rallies around these families and says, hey, we're going to throw 50 children's, we're going to throw 50 babysitters at you, and we're going to schedule all of it. It's just such a huge blessing for these families to give them the gift of time. Next foundation is to create clear systems to support the work of ministry. So you have this mission, you have this ministry, you have kind of idea of what it is you want to do, but it really will help you be effective if you have clear systems, like clear workflows, clear kind of back-end systems that will help you support the work of ministry. And this is really what May is going to talk about. She is just the wizard of Excel and spreadsheeting and all this stuff, and you'll see her genius at work. But it's really important to have a leader in place, right? If this is just something that says, we're all kind of in it, then none of us are really in it, and we're never going to get anything done. It is so helpful to have a designated leader to say, hey, this is where we need to go, and really kick the ball off. Have a process for taking in new individuals and families. Have a process for recruiting and training new volunteers. Need to be able to take care of scheduling and communication amongst volunteers and families. And you need to have clear publicity and documentation on your website. This is one of the simplest things to do if you're concerned about disability ministry, even if you don't have any disability families at your church. Like, it just put yourself in the shoes of a family who has a disability and they're trying to figure out where they can go. If they were looking at your church website, would it be clear to them that they are welcome? Would it be clear to them that this is where they should go? They need to send an email to this person to let them know they're coming. They need to go talk to this person. These are the kinds of services that are provided. So having clear publicity and documentation is just one of the easiest things to do. So even if there's no one at your church that really fits in this demographic, having a game plan and planning ahead for it will help you meet those needs when they arise. And again, May is going to kind of go more into a lot of the systems in a bit. And finally, as we want to come alongside individuals and families and discipleship and counseling, the world is really great about providing services. And the world is really great about providing events. There are so many things that a family affected by disability can go to and be blessed by, and events and outings and all kinds of activities. The one thing they will not find in the world is the gospel. And the one thing they will not find is the answer for the problem of sin. The one thing they will not find is to see how much better Jesus is than whatever idol is that they're pursuing. And so really, all the events and all the programming that we do is just a way to get our foot in the door so that we can minister the gospel to these families at the deepest level. We want to counsel them. We want to address their anxieties. We want to address their fear and their anger and their bitterness and their stress and their depression. Some of the things that you could think about, like how do we do this, is really having a theology of disability. So just taking Paul Talges' message and just play it back, you know, and a theology of suffering, which is what I think Paul's talking about that now in the counseling seminar. And at this point, you're thinking, oh, I probably should have gone to that one. But is it clear that you want to do more than just provide a fun time for these families? You want to care for their souls. And this is something that we're trying to do actually with our own disability families, is maybe even on a respite night, you know, instead of releasing the families to go out and go, you know, go on a date or whatever, saying, hey, do you want someone to sit down with you and talk with you about your marriage? We'd love to talk to you about how you guys are doing. And so hopefully someday someone will take us up on that. So that will do it for me for these foundations. I'm going to turn it over to May. And again, May got her start in disability ministry as a high school student. And it's just amazing to me to see how God has grown her. She's a speech pathologist by training. And so that she's been able to bring a lot of her expertise and experience there into the ministry. She's just been a joy to work with. So I'm going to hand it over to May.
Okay. Hello.
That's worked now.
Thank you. My name is May, and I'm just going to be talking a lot about the nuts and bolts of, like, what does it look like to run disability ministry here at Lighthouse? And so to start off, on the top of page 3 of your notes, I just put some quick definitions in there in case I accidentally use a lot of Lighthouse-specific jargon so you can follow what I'm talking about. And David already kind of explain what most of them are, but just to highlight one that's kind of confusing is that when we talk about Bridge, we are a separate ministry from Children's Ministry, so we have our own intake forms for new families that are separate from the Children's Ministry intakes. We have our own intakes for our volunteers, our own scheduling, but we just work really closely together, so there's going to be a lot of overlap. And our Bridge ministry has a core team of volunteers, so like Zach, myself, David, a group of us are overseeing the ministry, and we oversee different aspects of the ministry. So like Zach will talk about respite, I'm doing intake and shadowing. But then we have our whole group of people who volunteer as regular shadows. And then just to reiterate too, we're not exclusively a ministry just for kids or just for kids who have autism. But that's who God has brought to our church so far. So most of what I'm going to be talking about is going to be geared towards those populations because we just unfortunately don't have a lot of experience with other groups for disability. Okay, we're going to go through a lot of information, a lot of forms together, so please bear with me. And if you have questions, feel free to write them down for later. So we'll start with intake. What happens if we have a new family who shows up at our church who might need some extra help from Bridge Ministry? For us, a lot of the times, if a new family is coming, they usually are connected either through our website or somebody invited them. So they'll usually let us know through email or word of mouth that they're going to come. So we can kind of anticipate that they're going to come and need someone to shadow. But in the rare event that they just show up and are visiting, we have this Sunday visitor short form, which is Appendix 1, I think, in your notes. It's just a little sheet that we have with all of our children's ministry classrooms in case a new family comes and signs in their kids, and then it's clear that maybe they would need a shadow. So it's, as you can see, really short. It's just to get your contact information, what are your needs, basically. And then that form will get passed on to somebody from Bridge who can then follow up with the family later and help them to complete the formal full intake process if they decide that they're going to stay at Lighthouse long term. We also pair this with a little, with a little volunteer script, because as Bridge volunteers, we interact with these families and these disabilities a lot, but not everybody from children's ministry may have that experience. So we have this little script that is just to help the children's ministry volunteers kind of know what the process is, what to talk about with the family when they show up to visit. Then if the family decides that they're going to attend Lighthouse regularly, we'll go ahead with our full intake process. And so the biggest thing about that is we use our intake form, which is Appendix 2. So previously, what you have printed in your handout is what we would use. It was a paper form. The families would either print it out and bring it to us, or they would do like a PDF edit or Microsoft Word and email it back to me. But I realized that that was not very efficient, and all of our forms were in different places. Some were paper only, some were electronic. And so we're currently mid-process transitioning to using an electronic form through JotForm, if you know that website. So all of the information that's in your packet is just transferred onto that form that we can then email to all the families and have all of their records in one place. So if the family is coming to Lighthouse, we want to go ahead with intake. If they're in children's, they still fill out their children's ministry registration so that the Sunday school teachers know that they're part of their class. But then we also ask them to fill out our intake so we can get a better picture of what the family's needs are, what their hopes are, how we can serve them, and what shadowing might look like for that specific family. It's basically a three-step process. So first off, the parents or the caregivers will complete the intake form, which will hopefully soon be this online one. And it goes over like basic information about who lives at home. It talks about what diagnosis they might have, what their communication abilities or needs are, any behavior challenges. And then a nice one that we have at the end is just goals that the family has, what they're hoping that their kid will get out of Sunday school or church. And sometimes we get goals like that my kid will go to the bathroom by himself, which we can't do a whole lot to help them with. But it's really nice to see when the parents say things like that they'll tell me something that they learned in Sunday school, that they'll make a friend in Sunday school, because that kind of gives us an idea of how we can really minister specifically for that family. So the family will fill out the form, and once we have it, then a Bridge Corps member will meet with the parents just to go over it together in a little bit more detail, ask any follow-up questions, get a little bit more information about some of the bullet points or checkboxes that we had. And then the last step is just kind of this ongoing casual interaction that we have with the families just every Sunday. If the kid is doing great in Sunday school, if something is really hard for them in Sunday school, we just keep that conversation going so we can adjust our care and our shadowing as needed. A couple of challenges that we wanted to share with you about intake. One is if families don't fill out the intake form for a really long time or possibly ever. So far we've just dealt with that by sending a lot of reminder emails, gently following up with them at church, like, here, I printed the form for you, and it's right here, and you can take it with you today. But it's hard, and families are busy. You could also just schedule one meeting to kind of combine steps one and two so that they are just filling out the form with you, and then you're just discussing it together at the same time if that time constraint is the problem. And then also, while we're waiting for the intake form, like, the family is still coming to church and the kid still needs shadowing, even though we don't have the form. And so we have the shadows write notes in these things that we call bridge books, which we're going to talk a lot more about later. And that's helpful for us to just give us an idea of how this kid is doing, what their needs are in the meantime while we're waiting for more formal information from the intake. The other thing is that information from the intake forms often needs to be updated, especially since most of our kids are younger, they're on the spectrum, then they go through a lot of developmental changes. Some of them, their communication needs will change or improve, especially if they're getting therapy, or sometimes they just go through different phases with behavior. We had one kid who just all of a sudden randomly decided that he liked flushing everything down the toilet, and just every Sunday he would run to the bathrooms to flush things down the toilet. And that went on for like several months, but then he kind of just grew out of that and doesn't need to do that anymore. So whatever information was in the intake might not have really reflected what the kid was doing at that given time. And so hopefully our plan is that using this online jot form will help to streamline the process of updating the family's information, because then we can just send this out annually and have the families refill it out to just note, like, okay, previously they were nonverbal, now they're signing, or previously they had this behavior, but now not so much anymore. And so my hope is that I'll have the annual updates in the summer-ish before the next school year happens, especially that will help us to figure out when the kids are moving up to the next grade level in their Sunday school class, and then that new information can go with them into their new class. Oh, and then the other thing to note is for us at Lighthouse, what qualifies a kid to have a shadow in the first place? Our policy is that the child needs to have a formal diagnosis of a disability, and they also require additional one-on-one support to participate in the Sunday program, either because they have poor communication skills or behavior concerns, attention, anything like that. So we do have some kids who have a diagnosis of autism, but they don't need a shadow on Sundays because they are just doing really well in the class on their own, or they previously had a shadow and they kind of don't need one anymore. We did have one situation once with a kid that we had felt and their children's ministry teachers had felt needed a shadow because he was just having a hard time really participating in the class without some extra one-on-one care. But he didn't have a formal diagnosis, and when we had talked to the family about it, not all of us were on the same page about where he was in pursuing that further or seeking a diagnosis. So our solution for that was that children's ministry would be the ones to provide the additional classroom support, and we weren't going to provide a bridge shadow. So instead of the children's ministry class having like 3 volunteers per Sunday for that class, then they would just plan to have 4 to have somebody provide that extra help for him. But that was just that one case that we had so far. Okay, so I've talked a lot about how we work with children's ministry for intake, but then kind of our next steps for integrating the kids into our Sunday school class. One thing that was really nice for us was doing these classroom introductions. So I believe that's also in your handouts. As a lot of people have said already, our bridge kids are fully mainstreamed into Sunday school. And so we had asked each bridge family last year if they would be comfortable with us introducing their kids to the rest of their classmates. we made sure to ask just because sometimes families don't really want to draw attention to disability, and especially if the kid might be more high functioning, what used to be called Asperger's is now high functioning autism. They might not want to highlight that to their peers. But most of our families were really receptive, and they shared with us a lot of input about what kind of information we could share with the class, or that they wanted us to share with the class about their kids. And then someone from Bridge Corps would just visit the Sunday school classes at the beginning of the school year and do a quick, like, 3-minute, 5-minute introduction. And this was just so helpful for us to teach not just the kids in Sunday school, but even the Sunday school teachers about disability and some practical ways to encourage a heart for disability and how to love those with disability in the class. And so from these introductions, we tailored them specifically for each kid. So it might be like, oh, this kid, like, he might not talk to you and he's not really verbal, but you can still say hi to him and have him look at you, and then that's how he's acknowledging that you're there. Or this other kid is super into numbers and he just loves numbers. So you can tell him what your favorite number is, or ask him what his favorite number is, and that's how you can interact with him. And just as a kind of side note, Sesame Street actually has a lot of really good resources about teaching kids and about autism and talking about disability. So some of what we wrote for our introduction is kind of adapted from Sesame Street's resources. So if you just Google, like, Sesame Street autism, it'll come up. And I think they have a blog post that's called Teaching Kids About Autism. And then kind of in the same way of introducing the kids to the class, it's helpful to just introduce Bridge Ministry or the Shadows to anybody new who might be visiting. If there's parent helpers, new volunteers, or visitors in the class, just to make sure that you highlight on Sunday, oh, welcome to our class. Like, we have 2 kids who have autism in this class, and this person is their shadow, which means they're going to be giving them one-on-one help, just so that there's no confusion and no really, like, questions or about what's going on. Why is that kid getting so much more support than my kid? Or I thought that we weren't supposed to be so hands-on with, like, directing them and things like that, just to kind of make sure everybody's clear. But the introductions, I felt like, were just so great to really see, even in young kids, a better understanding of how we can care for others with disability. And especially for older kids, like 2nd to 5th grade, they really responded to those introductions. And we saw them inviting the other kids to play a game, telling them, great job, like, hey, it's your turn, like, come here, it's your turn to do this. And it was really cool to see. So we're hoping that it'll continue to be something where we can grow that heart and even our younger ones at church for ministry. Okay, are you guys still okay? Still with me? I know it's a long session. Okay, so that was all intake. So now we'll kind of switch gears and do shadowing and what that looks like. So again, shadow is just what we call our volunteers for Bridge Ministry at Lighthouse. And so our intake process for shadows, we just have them fill out our children's ministry application. They have to get live scanned, so we just make sure everybody is background checked. And then they observe twice. So that basically means if I'm new, I'm signing up for the ministry, let's say Zach is scheduled to be a shadow for this first grader on Sunday. So I'll show up and just kind of watch what they're doing. I'll ask Zach what's going on and just get a feel for what a Sunday morning looks like as a shadow. And I'll do that 2 times before I actually get placed on the schedule to fly solo and be a shadow myself. A day in the life of a shadow. So you'll be assigned to serve as a one-on-one during our Sunday service. We do provide shadows for our youth group students on Friday nights, sometimes for special events like our fall festival or a church retreat, but your primary responsibility will be on Sundays. So you'll get an email, hey, you're scheduled to serve on Sunday in this classroom with this kid, show up at this time. So you wake up nice and early and you get to church 20 minutes early, hopefully, to pray with the Sunday school teachers and to prep for your kid. using our bridge bins and books that I will talk about in a little bit, and then wait for the family to arrive. And when the family gets there, your main responsibility is just to help the kid participate in as much of Sunday service as they can. So as we said before, it's a full integration program, but we might just adjust based on different needs. So we might have different levels of involvement where instead of sitting on the rug during Sunday school lesson, maybe you're sitting at the table with your shadow. Or maybe instead of sitting through the full lesson, you can go take a little walk, take a break, and then come back. And then our bridge bins are something that will really help you with figuring out what kind of adjustments you can make for those kids. So bridge bins are these like plastic boxes, and we just have, well, not every kid has one, but most of our bridge kids have one, and it contains a whole bunch of resources that are specific to that kid. So it might have, for this kid, he's very into sensory kind of things. So we have like Play-Doh for him to use his hands, and that's very calming for him. It might have toys that they're families brought from home that can be used as a calming transition object for them to help them transition into the class when the parent is dropping them off. We have another kid who is really into writing and drawing, so hers has just a bunch of paper and markers, and she'll write her memory verses on Sundays with her shadow using these. So the bins, we try to tailor specifically for each kid so that the shadows can go in there and see like what are some things that they can do with their kid on Sunday morning, and hopefully create opportunities to adapt the Sunday lessons or give them some sort of way to point the kid to Christ more clearly instead of just, I'm going to sit here and try to keep this kid calm and not running outside in the parking lot for the Sunday morning. But even just, okay, let's color this page from this Bible story coloring book, and I'll just talk to you about who's in the picture. So we use those pretty much every Sunday or at special events with those kids. Okay, so you've shadowed the kid, the Sunday service is over, the parents coming to pick them up. At the end of the class, there's usually this huge line to check out the kids. So as David said, we have a lot of kids here. But the bridge parents get to bypass that line and come directly into the classroom to talk to you and pick up their kid. It's an easier transition for a lot of the kids who have a hard time with transitions. And then it also really helps us just build relationship with that family, and the shadow can talk to the parents more about what happened that day. Oh, he was doing this today, is that normal? Or I wasn't sure how to respond when this happened. Or he did amazing with his craft today and he usually doesn't like it, but look at what he made. So the parents took the kid, and now Sunday class is over, so you're done, right? But wrong. You have one more thing to do. And you have to, you should hopefully, write notes in the shadows log of our bridge book. So bridge books are just these composition notebooks that we have for every bridge kid who needs a shadow. And it stays in their bridge bin or just in their Sunday school classroom if they don't have a bin. These books are meant to be resources for the shadows to help them learn about kids. If I'm going to be with a kid that I've never worked with before, it'll give me some information about who they are and what a Sunday service might look like with them. It encourages our shadows to be a little bit more consistent in how we care for the kids. Most of our kids have a rotation of about like 3 to 4 volunteers who shadow them every week. And so this will kind of help us know like, oh, does this kid usually go to worship, or does he usually stay in the class by himself, or does he usually carry this toy around with him everywhere, or should I prompt him to put it away? It'll kind of help with that consistency and knowing what the expectations are. And then, just unfortunately that we have to put this in there, it also helps us to keep records just to cover our bases in case there's ever any sort of incident, any sort of legal matter or safety concern that comes up, but thankfully nothing so far yet. So what the bridge book looks like is we'll have a section in here that has information from their intake form. So just basic about like how old they are, what's their diagnosis, are they verbal, nonverbal, any behavior concerns we should know about, any allergies or medications. And then we'll put in their things that they like preferred activities and the goals that the family set for the kid. And then in addition to that, we have what we call our shadows log. So this is the space for the shadows and also the children's ministry volunteers too, to write any sort of notes about what happened that Sunday. So you could write that he did great today, no concerns, everything was the same. Or you could say that, okay, today he forgot to bring his headphones, so he really didn't want to go to worship, so I just kind of held my hands around his ears and he did better with that. Just notes that would be helpful for anybody who's going to come shadow the kid the next week to go back and look and see how this kid is doing in Sunday school and how can I love him and help him to participate in Sunday when I'm shadowing. And these books just live at church. We encourage the shadows, like, just keep the information, the family's personal information, confidential. It's just for the purpose of us being able to serve the family well and to be, caring for them in the best way that we can. Okay, you guys doing okay? You need a stretch? Okay. So last section is how we train our shadows, train and schedule. So we've included in your appendixes, the Bridge Shadows Handbook. And so we have an electronic copy that's available to all the shadows all the time, but we also keep paper copies in each Sunday school classroom that I'm pretty sure nobody looks at ever. It outlines our ministry goals and our policies. And most of our policies really do overlap with our children's ministry policies, but there's some adjustments that we make specifically for Bridge that I just wanted to highlight. One is the level of physical support that we give. So for example, children's ministry here has a policy that once a kid reaches a certain age, we really discourage lap sitting. We want them to gain that skill of being able to sit on their own, have that maturity and that appropriateness. But for some of our Bridge kids, it's a lot harder for them and they might need that extra support to sit. They might need that extra like physical input around their body to feel calm. And so we note in there that it's okay. It's a little bit more lenient when it comes to the Bridge kids, what our policy is with physical support. Of course, we're gonna try to fade it out over time and maybe it's at the beginning, I'm having the kids sit with me in my lap, but as they get more comfortable and more consistent with that routine, I just sit behind them and maybe have my hand on their shoulder, and then maybe they get comfortable with that, and I'm able to just sit behind them and have no physical contact with them, and they're fine. So we just highlight that for our Bridge individuals, we might have to give them some extra support in that way. Maybe during cleanup time, I have to use hand over hand, which just means I put my hand on the kid's hand, and okay, we're cleaning up, put the toys in, and I'm kind of doing it for them. But they just need that support for right now until they can manage that on their own. Another one that we have in there is how to address sin. As we've talked about with the theology of disability before, just because they have a disability doesn't mean that they're not still sinners. But it is a lot trickier, I think, sometimes to know, is this behavior that this kid is doing a manifestation of their autism or is it a manifestation of their sin? And sometimes it can be hard to tell. But for me, personally, okay, I don't have like a verse to back this up specifically, but I feel like a lot of times you can see it like in their eyes. Like you can tell that, like, you know that they know that they're doing something wrong. And sometimes that's kind of a key in that maybe this is an area where I can be a little bit more like graciously firm in pointing them to what they're supposed to be doing. For example, some kids we have, they might be standing up and spinning around when they're supposed to be sitting and watching this video with the class, but we know that he spins around anytime he's really happy or excited. In that case, it's not really necessary or appropriate for me to tell him, like, hey, stop, you need to sit down, because he's just expressing that he's really excited about what's going on. or a kid who might be making a lot of noises during our prayer time, but he makes a lot of noises because he likes that sensation of like hearing himself or feeling his mouth make those noises. And it might just be encouraging him like, okay, you can make that noise, but like quietly to yourself. But on the other hand, sometimes we have kids where you tell them, okay, it's time for craft, and then they look at you and go run over to a chair and push the chair over, and then they look at you again. And in that case, I know that, okay, then we need to pick up the chair. Right now, it's time for craft. Let's go sit down. We're going to do our craft time, and redirecting that way. Or I've had another kid who really just will get into these silly moods and just like to lick everything and lick all of the toys and just laugh uncontrollably, even though you tell him not to. But then being able to take him away from that space, sit him down, talk about we need to be good listeners because, and explaining we're being loving to our other teachers, to our friends in our class by not licking everything, and then he's able to move on. And so we try to talk about that in our Shadows Handbook and with our Shadows about it's okay to address those areas of sin when it is sin, but let's work together to kind of figure out how we can tell when it is sin or maybe just their autism. Kind of along similar lines, I put in the handbook some behavior strategies that are just general that anybody can use. Like David mentioned, I am a speech therapist, but most of our Bridge volunteers have zero experience with disability prior to serving in Bridge. And so some simple behavior strategies are in there that if you've never worked with a kid with autism before, you can try this just to see if it'll help them to listen better. Like simplifying your directions instead of, okay, we got to put our toys away and then we're going to line up because then it's time to go to worship and we're going to go sing. And simplifying that to, okay, first clean up, then worship. Like just simplifying your language. Or giving them a visual schedule or countdowns, anything like that. So we try to provide some general training for our shadows that way. We also, outside of the handbook, train our shadows with training meetings, which hopefully one day in the future will become annual. Some of the stuff we've talked about are just our policies, like what I just went over with you with the handbook, theology of disability, which you've heard a lot about today already. But one really helpful one for us was a meeting where we just split up everybody into groups based on the kids that they're typically assigned to shadow, and we just talked together about practical ways to love that kid. So we all sat down in groups. Everybody had their kid's Bridge book in their group, and they just looked at it together and talked about what it's like to usually be with that kid on Sundays. And then we have the parents' goals in the Bridge books, but we made our own shadows goals for our Bridge books too and put them in there. So if the parent's goal was, I really want my kid to be able to make friends, then our shadows would write goals in there of, okay, so every Sunday at the beginning of class, we're gonna say hi to two people. And then that's just something that we know as volunteers, we can try to be consistent in implementing to support that kid and help them to participate more in class and grow in that way. Or if the parent's goal was that they'll learn more about their Bible, then as shadows, we know, okay, for this kid, we really want to try to be consistent with doing memory verse every week or some sort of adapted lesson with that kid, and we really want to try to be consistent with that. So that was just really beneficial to get our shadows on the same page and to feel like they had a game plan instead of just showing up on a Sunday and just trying to keep everybody calm and manage the chaos. And we also invited children's ministry workers there too, so the Sunday school teachers. And that was really nice to include them and invite them because a lot of times I think the children's ministry and Bridge ministry can feel like they're separate. And I've had children's ministry teachers ask me before too, like, okay, so if I'm handing out craft supplies, do I give it to the kid or do I give it to his shadow? Or like, if the kid is going to run out the door, like, should I go get him or should I just wait and let the shadow get him? Which I would always say, like, well, if you're there, like, you should just block the door. But I try to put that in the handbook too. There's a section about roles of children's ministry workers and roles of bridge shadows. And just to really encourage that, no, we're all doing this together. We're all loving these families together. And so just inviting them into that process of these kids are in your Sunday school class and under your care too. And we're just there to kind of help facilitate that. Okay, so last thing is how do we schedule our shadows? So the nice thing is that there's one Bridge Corps member who very graciously does all of the scheduling for everybody, who is not me. So every quarter, our shadows will send her our frequency. So I can serve like once a month, twice a month, which Sunday service we're available for, because Lighthouse does have three. And then our availability, so just any weeks that we know we aren't able to serve. And then based on that information and also the family's needs, so like what service they're going to attend or maybe any planned absences they have, then that Bridge Corps member will create a Google Sheet schedule and send it out to all of the shadows. And then any gaps in the schedule are highlighted. So like the gray ones mean, hey, there's nobody available for this day. So if you are free, can you please fill in that gap? And the black just means that the family's not planning on coming that day. And so that's just the way that we felt has worked for us in terms of efficiency and being able to fill in where we need to fill in with scheduling. But just two challenges about scheduling process to highlight. One is if the families don't show up for service. So like I'm here and service started at 11 and it's 11:10 and my kid's still not at Sunday school. What do I do? We typically encourage our volunteers to wait for about 20 to 30 minutes just in case the family is still coming, and we try to text the family too. You probably know it's really hard for anybody with even typically developing kids to get everybody like teeth brushed and clothes on and in the car and out the door. And it can be even harder for our families with kids with disability to do that if they're just having an off morning or a tantrum or a meltdown or something like that. So sometimes we do have families who just come really late. If after the 20 to 30 minutes they're still not there, we typically just send the volunteers back into the sanctuary so they can attend service, or they can just go and be free and do whatever they were going to do on Sunday. But our volunteers have all been just really gracious and patient to wait around and just help as needed in the class until the family shows up, or just for the rest of the class, even if their family's not there. The other challenge that we've had that's a little bit harder is when families show up unexpectedly. So maybe I'm scheduled to shadow this kid at 5 o'clock, but it's 11 o'clock and here they are at Sunday school and we don't have anybody scheduled for them. And that's a lot harder to find a last minute shadow, somebody who's free right then and there, just on the spot. And we're still brainstorming the best way to handle this. So if anybody knows the answer, you can raise your hand and tell me what to do. It might come down to establishing like a better communication system with the families. But again, I know it's hard because things will come up last minute or families are just busy trying to manage all of their kids. So we're still kind of working out the kinks in that one. But so far, if we're really stuck and we don't have anybody, our Sunday school workers are very kind to kind of tag team with that kid. So, for example, if I'm teaching in Sunday school, maybe I'm taking care of the lesson and someone else is doing craft that day. So during the lesson, then that helper will be sitting with the kid while I'm teaching. And then during craft, we'll switch and they'll lead the craft and I'll sit with the kid. And that's kind of the short-term solution that we have for now. Okay, thank you guys for bearing with me, and I'm going to hand it over to Zach, who's going to talk more about respite.
Oh yeah, you guys can totally just like get up and walk around if you need, get blood flowing, not offended. So we got an introduction from Pastor David. He's our spiritual overlord for the Bridge Ministry, and you met May, who is our administrative overlord, He's a pastor, she's a speech pathologist, I'm a barista. I have no professional training in this field. And even before I came into this disability ministry at Lighthouse, I had no experience. I would be one of those people in school who would see the special needs class and just be like, okay, that's them, this is me, I'll be over here. But it is nice. It is nice for your ministry to have like professionals like May to do the ministry. But at the end of the day, you don't need professionals to be able to love people. You just need humility and patience and faith. And it's been about 5 years since I started helping out in this disability ministry, and I've grown a lot. I've learned a lot, and there's just a lot more that I can still learn. Yeah, and it's sometimes intimidating to work with Overlord May, but that would be, just thinking about that, it would be missing the point of any ministry, and it's because it's never about the skills or the training or even the programs or the events, but it's about helping people draw near to God, and God is the one who does all the sanctifying and real shepherding, and we're his instruments. So the other thing that I oversee the respite ministry in our disability ministry, but we also have other events. And for each of these events, as David was saying, that we need to have a purpose not only to be effective for gospel ministry, but also to be able to steward the church's funds well, and also to be able to even gauge, can we do this, the feasibility of whatever event or program. And it could be as simple as just to surround the families affected by disabilities with the church, or to allow families to have rest. So some of the events that we do outside of the Sunday shadowing program is, there was one time we went to a Dodgers game, and a whole bunch of people from church and the families from the Bridge ministry went to Dodgers game, and they were all just rambunctious all together. We have these beach days that are put on by the one that we're connected with is the Best Day Foundation. You can Google that, and they have some sites around the South Bay. We also do babysitting and also respites, which I'll get into. And each of these is a work in progress, and they've all expanded a lot from their initial purpose. As May was sharing, that it's important to have a consistent foundation for your Sunday ministries. But once those systems are more set in place you're more comfortable with that, then these kinds of extracurricular things are great in being able to minister. And the capabilities and strengths of each church and whatever context you're coming from is different. And as you look into different ways, the billion ways that Dave was mentioning, just keep those in mind. So what is respite? So respites were originally just meant as a means to give the parents a few hours, 3 hours to themselves a few times a year. Rest is something that God commands us to do, and God rests after creation, and Jesus rested on multiple occasions on his time on earth. But for families affected by disabilities, oftentimes it seems like rest is not an option. But we as a church should be conduits of God's grace and help them rest, and that's where these respites came, were birthed out of. So we started off just doing it every quarter, so 4 times a year. And then the next year we tried every other month, so 6 times a year, and then we added a mealtime before a couple of them. And then this year we're trying every other month, as we did before, but we're also adding this special summer respites that will happen every other week. So we went from 6 times a year to 16 times a year. So we haven't done the summer respites yet, and it honestly feels kind of daunting, but with God's grace in the many, many previous years in preparing the heart of the congregation here at Lighthouse and his present grace to sustain us through these things, I think we can do it. But feel free to email us in August to see how it went, see if we crashed and burned or if it went well. With each of these additions, each year we realize that there's so much potential for respites. So obviously, the original purpose is it provides an opportunity of physical rest for the parents. But we also found that it provides a very great and easy serving opportunity for the church, and also it became a meeting ground for families. So I'll expand on those points. So first, a serving opportunity. So on a Sunday, as May was sharing that, after the observing phase of becoming a volunteer in our disability ministry, you're kind of just thrown into it by yourself. And that can be kind of scary. Coming from someone with no experience, that's what happened to me. I was just confused for a few months. But respites are an easier and a lot less intimidating way for the congregation to be a part of the ministry. As Dave said, it's a single event commitment. And it's literally just group babysitting. So like our schedule is first the kids get dropped off, and there's like 30 minutes of buffer time. They're just playing with the toys in the classroom and whatnot. And then once all the kids are there, then we cart them all over to outside to our playground area, and they play until they're tired, which is usually about an hour. And then, one of the kids will complain to us or something. And then we'll cart them back into the classroom, and then we'll just watch a movie, and the kids will go home. So it's really simple schedule. And we always make sure to have experienced people present. So like the kids who need more attention, then they're paired with the more experienced shadows. And then the inexperienced volunteers are tasked with playing with or hanging out with the siblings or the more chill kids in our disability ministry. And we also found that it's not only an easier way, but it's also a way for different ministries to serve together. So we began when we were starting with just quarterly, with four times a year, we began with recruiting our main young singles ministries. Because first of all, it just four ministries, easier to fit. Okay, the youth will do here, college here, and so on and so forth. And also, young people are great because they tend to have this combination of being the most free and have the most energy and being the most willing to try new things. But then in the following year, we added on our small, what we call small groups. You guys probably call them like community groups or prayer groups, but our small groups, we included them into the two extra ones that we had. But obviously, our schedules are all different, and they have kids, and so schedules became a problem, and small groups couldn't do it all together on the same date. But we realized that was totally fine, and now we just pretty much mix and match, and this has been a great way for all these ministry who would normally not really meet each other because we're a fairly large church and you just sometimes just miss certain people. And this allowed people to meet and serve with one another. There's this respite that we had, I think it was April or March or something, where we had two families that came to help with really young children. Their children were not at all helpful in a logistical sense. There was two very young children, and we had to have specific shadows for them too. But what was great from having them be help out, these families help out, is that families affected by disabilities and families that aren't affected by disabilities directly were able to mingle, which doesn't always get to happen. And also the kids, even though in a logistical sense they were just creating more, making us exert more energy, they also tend to lack a lot of, they lack the inhibition that maybe you or I have to just play with these kids. And that, as the night went on, it encouraged the other adult volunteers to also love without inhibition. God has really used respite to sanctify not only the families affected by disabilities, but also the entirety of the congregation. And a second way that we've seen respite really be a blessing was that it became a meeting ground for people. Creating space for people to meet is perhaps the most important thing that has come out of respite. Yeah, meeting is the first step to fellowship, and conversation is a huge part in building one another up in Christ. And respites are a meeting ground for those outside of the ministry, as I was sharing. The church, as Paul and Kim were preaching, that the church needs families affected by disabilities, and that was the purpose of beginning those meals before respite. We encouraged the volunteers to come for free food and intentionally interact with both the parents and the children. And oftentimes on Sundays, the Sunday shadows don't have much overlapping time to get to know the families. It's either they're getting briefed about the child, how the child was doing in the morning, or debriefing the parent on how the child was doing during service, or putting down the records in our bridge books. So these meal times was a time to have like an hour set aside, very intentional, to meet and have deeper conversations, and hopefully that these interactions during the meal time carry on to Sunday and even beyond that. And respites are also not only for volunteers to the families, but also a meeting ground for those within the ministries. These families have been equipped by God through their many, many experiences to minister to and counsel and encourage each other. And this is what the purpose of the summer respites, the every other week in the summer, is for. So for summer respites, we're very much testing our limits. We did shrink the time down from 3 hours to 2 hours, but we are doing it every other week, which is different than every other month, and we're also adding an activity or hangout time for the parents here at Lighthouse. So we'll see how that goes. So our recruitment has been, so May created our administrative overlord created this spreadsheet that we emailed all the volunteers in the past respites and also for our Sunday shadows, and they're able to sign up for a certain date. So we have like 7 slots that we want to fill. We don't know how many families are going to come to each one, but we have 7 slots that we hope to fill. And because the ministry has become so visible over the years, that people have been, even without us asking people, they've been coming to us, and it's been a blessing to hear the willingness of the church. So respites are it's just one of many things that a church can do. But the ultimate goal of any event or program has to be to point ourselves and others, the other volunteers, the kids, and the parents to Christ. And so I'll be turning it over to Dave.